Hello, everyone. You're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but we most definitely aren't, because it's a podcast. Get it?
Thank you. Thank
You
you.
know, I finally run out of things to say in the
Yes,
intro.
you
So
have. Well,
we've only done 125 episodes.
number.
Okay, I'm your host with the most.
Thank you.
And with me, as always, is my co-host with the so most, Marcus.
I'm gonna say the least.
Oh, well, that's mean.
It's the opposite. Anyway,
man, that's horrible.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. I have a lot on my mind at the moment. I feel like we're fried from this week in life things. We've been busy.
Yeah.
And then just a lot of stuff. But we did forget to talk about something in the last episode, so I want to make sure that we mention it up front. So technically, this would be like probably in the games, watching, playing, all that section. But in the last episode, I realized after we recorded that I forgot to bring up the fact that we watched the Castlevania Takarazuka review rendition that was streaming. So as of this recording, it's done streaming online, but it was available for like 3 months or something. And we finally watched it in March and wanted to share our thoughts on it. So this is an adaptation of Symphony of the Night, like loosely the story of that game, but Takarazuka version. So if you're not familiar, Takarazuka Review is an all-female theater troupe in Japan. Very fun. I've been a fan for years. They've done some game adaptations like Ace Attorney, but I believe this is the first one that they've streamed. We also watched the Casino Royale adaptation that they streamed online, and the streams have like English subtitles and subtitles in other languages. But yeah, they released Castlevania, and we had a fun time watching it, I think. What did you think?
I liked it. I think I don't know the story of any Castlevania game, even though
I've
played and seen some of them, including I think I've seen the full playthrough of Symphony of the Night. I guess there's not really that much, in my opinion, of story, you know, that I can recall.
Right.
You know, the gameplay is the real driver there.
Was it one of those things where all the story happens, like, in the manual or outside of an actual game?
I don't know. Either way, I don't really know it. So it was fine. It was fun. I like seeing the characters, you know, those designs, those classic designs from Symphony of the Night, and those costumes, like represented in real costumes. That was probably one of my favorite things, just seeing the familiar designs brought to life. I thought that was fun. I like that.
Yeah, and the music was really cool too. I like the music.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I also don't know enough about Symphony of the Night to comment on that aspect, but there were some fun characters, like the villains were very fun. And yeah, I liked Alucard, and it was just cool, very enjoyable to watch. In other life news, we did yet another market, been busy with Marcus. I think that was number 4 this past weekend. And I'm pleased to report it was by far my best market yet. Did very well, like 3 times as well as the other markets.
Possibly more than 3 times.
Yeah, at least 3 times. It was very surprising. And I've been writing reports on the markets on my coffee, and I still have to do this 4th one, but I'll do a full breakdown on like what sold and what I did and all that. But I started making, so I've been doing these Beanie Baby taxidermy art things, some little ones that are like magnets, and then some bigger ones that you hang on the wall. And then actually at the previous monthly market for this one that I went to before, somebody came by and she was like, oh, you know, it'd be really cute if you made these, but like old school, like cloth
photo albums.
Oh yeah, photo albums. So you do the cloth photo album, but then you put the Beanie Baby on the front. I was like, that's a really good idea. I love that. So I did make some, and one of them sold. So that was very exciting. And Not into the other Beanie Soul, but people always seem to really like them. So it's enjoyable to see people come by and get excited by them. And then I did have someone buy one of my handmade junk journals. So that was also exciting because I hadn't sold any of those to people I didn't know. I did sell one to a vendor that was friendly previously. But it's always exciting to have someone come by your booth and then get really hyped up by the stuff you're selling. There was a gal who was familiar with Otome games, and she's like a Japanese Otome game I happen to have only because I accidentally bought two copies of it and was like, well, I'm gonna get rid of the second copy. So I just had it there. And she saw it. She was like, is this an Otome game? It's so fun. So we started talking about Otome games a bit, and she bought a bunch of things, which is really sweet. So I don't know, a very good time. Of course, you don't have to sell things for it to be a good time, but I think the best part is like just talking to people that are excited about what you have and then being friendly with the other vendors. And that's always really nice. So glad to have done well. And thank you as always for your help and support. It was sadly a bit of another windy day. So I hope the next market is uneventful weather-wise. That would be nice.
We'll see.
We shall see. As for news, just a couple gaming news items. Marcus, take it away.
Okay. The next Rhythm Heaven game, Rhythm Heaven Groove, finally has a release date. I feel like they kept being like,
Yes.
coming sometime, and it's like, that's stop being cute, just give some information. So anyway, it is coming officially now on July 2nd. They announced that, and that is Nintendo Switch 1,
One only,
just like Tomodachi, which is fine. I mean, you can play them on the Switch too, but anyway, it's just good to see that it's finally released date. I love the Rhythm Heaven series. It's so much fun, even though it's like hard, kind of. It's a lot of fun, and I look forward to seeing it again. That's one I probably wanna get for sure.
Are you still on the fence about Tomodachi Life?
I am, yes. It's like it'll be fun, but like in that way that's like, let me just check this every once in a while. It's not like I'm gonna like sit down and play for like 2 hours at a time because it's not the type of game. So yeah, I really don't know. I don't know.
I'll be
Could still
fine.
get it. I just.
It just won't be like a big time sink, which is fine. You don't necessarily need a time sink.
I know.
And then wait till July
Is
and.
it? I don't know how much it costs.
Oh, I
Is it
don't know,
different
like
price?
50, 60, probably. I don't
Okay.
know.
Well,
The amount it's a Nintendo game.
whatever. We'll see.
Okay, we shall see.
But Rhythm Heaven is definitely one that I want to know
Definitely.
because it'll be fun.
They're good.
Good music, good graphics, good everything.
That's right. I concur with that purchase.
Great.
And another game that you've already purchased, actually, is Machine Child, which just came out, I think, a couple days ago as of this recording.
Yeah, it came out this week, I believe. Or this week on Steam, but I think it came out actually earlier
No, I'm
on
jealous.
Jast's storefront. I think they were just announcing the release on Steam. But anyway, yeah, so Machine Child is a raising simulation game in the same vein as the Princess Maker series. Definitely, that's probably like the major inspiration. But it's a newer one of those. And, you know, I already love Princess Maker quite a bit. That series is very near and dear to my heart. So it's like, well, I don't need another one. But I think the artist is really cool. I really like their art styles, like very, you know, pretty, ornate and things. So it's just a nice style. And then when it launched on Steam, there was a slight little discount. So, and I have a bunch of Steam credits still, because I've been farming cards. And so from that, it's like, when I don't even have to spend money, I'm like, yes.
That's easy. Free games
I'll get
with
it.
other Steam
And I mean, I
purchases.
guess at the end of the day, it's not free in the sense that I bought a bunch of games and then those. So I paid for something But then I get cards out of them.
Yeah, like on the Nintendo eShop or whatever. I guess you get some of a sad amount of points when you buy things. You get
Can you
more.
use the points to buy games?
You use the points for discounts. Yeah, that's the
Oh.
same idea. I've only ever gotten like a couple bucks off of eShop points, probably because I don't buy full price games on the eShop. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, still got Steam credit. So I was able to get it for nothing. Annoyingly, it doesn't work on Steam Deck. It says literally unsupported. So I'm guessing that's because it's like, you know, the developer or publisher, they did it for mouse and keyboard, and that's it.
Yeah.
Now, with that said, you can like make custom control schemes for Steam Deck, such as, you know, the joystick is a mouse, and you have a virtual keyboard available on Steam and all these things. So I think it's interesting then that it says unsupported, because normally if someone makes like a custom config, then it'll at least be marked as playable because it is. So I haven't even tried, but I'm just guessing because it's got that X mark symbol, like literally you cannot play it on Steam Deck. I don't know why. I mean, normally that's the case when a game is like online multiplayer and has DRM. That's the major reason why games are like fully unplayable. So don't know what's up with this game. But that's too bad because I think it would be a good fit for, you know, a portable thing. Just quick little session to take the girl to class, you know, have her do judo, whatever they do. Anyway, but it will not be that way, at least not online.
You gotta sit your ass down at the computer and raise your girl.
Unlike Princess Maker, there are like four different
Oh, really?
characters you can choose from, I believe. Versus, yeah, Princess Maker, it's like the one girl from space, us,
That's so
who you
funny.
take care of. I think I saw something like there's not that many endings though, which is a vast difference because Princess Maker is all about like you get like a million different endings, which way does the princess go, you know? But we'll see. It's free. I won't be able to complain that much.
No, I don't. We didn't write this in our show notes, but you were showing this wild game to me today. The Korean game? Do you remember this one? Is that coming out or just came out?
So I think it recently came out on Epic Game Store. But it's actually like a remake or a re-release or something of an original game.
That was a cult classic
Well,
game. I never heard.
that's what they say
Now
on
I can't
the
say
that's what they
anything.
say on the Epic Game Store page. And I want to look at the Epic Game Store, but it's not loading. Anyway, so in the description of the game, they said something about it being a cult classic, but I've never heard of it before. But then again, I'm not really familiar with like Korean games so much as I am with like obscure and weird Japanese games, so that could be the only reason why.
Yeah, and I remember it was interesting. It was also ported to PS2, and that PS2 release came out in Japanese.
I love
So.
that the Epic Game Store won't load the free game section, so I can't look at what it is.
So it was a free game? Wait, I missed
Yes.
that part of it.
Yes.
Oh. So, but by the time people listen to this, it won't be free anymore.
I think it's free until the 16th, so there's still some time.
Okay. Anyway,
We're taking forever to not
Yeah,
name
this
this
is
game because we can't load the information to see what the name is.
listening live. There it is. Tomac.
TOMAK. Yep.
And it looks really creepy. It's got like a girl with her head in a potted plant.
Yes. Save the Earth regeneration or something? I can't see what the actual name
So,
is.
I'm so confused. It was already out, and then it came to the Epic Games Store. It was a
There's.
re-release.
I don't know anything because there's not that much information available in English about this game. What I believe is the case is what often happens is games launch on the Epic Game Store and they launch for free. It's like it happens at the same time. They launch as part of this bundle.
It does say on Epic that the release date was April 1st, 2026. Is that
Yes.
the Epic Games Store release?
That is at least their release, yes. But I think that might be the release of this game's version at all. because it's regeneration, meaning like,
Right.
remake, release, re-release, whatever.
And it says it's to celebrate the 25th
Anniversary.
anniversary of this legendary 2001 PC classic.
I mean, the fact that it released on April 1st kind of is like there someone's having fun with it. This is a real game. It did come out on PC, it did come out on PS2. So it's a real game, but it's weird. Looking, yes, you got the flower pot head women, and you raise them, I guess.
Yeah, so another raising sim.
Yes. So I got that and I will check it out. And I figure if you have Epic, you have nothing to lose because it's free, so just
Yeah.
add it to your library.
And honestly, with all the free games you're always getting, like people should just sign up
I
and
mean,
grab them.
yes, but like every week I go in there and I get them and then I never play them. So I don't know, but it's a lot of games. I have like 200, 300 games.
We'll be like, oh, we have that game, and we're like, wait, I got it on Epic every once in a great while. Yeah. Okay, so that was a little bonus news for everyone.
Yes. Oh, my.
To hear us talk about it live. I'm interested to see the Japanese release. Because
Japanese? Oh, there was a Japanese
oh,
release.
Japanese
Yes.
PS2 release. Yeah.
Yes.
I'd be interested to see like what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and with that, we shall move into what we've been watching and reading and not really playing, but I will say, just to kick us off, that I've returned to one of my favorite anxiety games. When I am stressed out about the world, which world news is a bit stressful this week, I tend to pick up Picross. So I've reignited my love for Picross. I was playing the, oh my gosh, my mind is totally blanking on the, and I know you can't help me with this.
Yeah, I don't know which one you were playing.
It's the one where the,
Was it San Mario?
no, it's the one where the girls are all animals, and it was a mobile game, and then it became an anime, and the main character is a serval.
Don't know.
Kimono Friends.
Oh,
There we
okay.
go. Kimono Friends Picross is the one that I was playing this week. Just because I would say that's probably the one I've played the most of, because I think it was the first one I got. And I got it right, like Kimono Friends was at its peak. They released the anime. I watched the anime. It's delightfully weird. We should actually watch it. It's
Okay.
pretty fun. And I think around that time is when they released the Picross for Switch in English. So I grabbed that, and then that's when I really got into Picross. And so that is like the most Picross I've played, Picross game I've played. I've got, you know how there were like pages of the
Yes.
puzzles. I've got multiple pages cleared, so I have to go fun going through that. And then every time you clear one of the puzzles, it shows you a different animal girl, and it's fun. So back to that, might play some. I want to say the other one, Sega Master System Picross. That's the one I have, and then Hatsune Miku. I don't actually have a scenario Picross game,
Oh, okay.
but maybe I need one. I did get Sumiko Gurashi Fake Picross when we were in Japan last year, so maybe I'll try that out.
Okay.
Then we watched a couple things. Firstly, we've brought some of Australia back to California with MasterChef Australia, the classic show. I think we're watching season two right now, which is available on Tubi, our favorite streaming platform. It's very fun to watch MasterChef Australia because I did watch it in real time when I lived there, and I was telling you that I would have it on like every night, and it'd be on right around dinner time, so it'd be like cooking dinner and eating dinner, and MasterChef would be on. Just a lot of episodes. They ran for like months, and it was on, I don't know, like 4 days a week or something long. So it's very interesting to be going through it with you. I mean, I remember those people, and it's a little less, you know, dramatic than like Real Housewives or something like that, but it's still like a fun background show.
Yeah.
What do you think of watching it? You've heard some Aussie phrases, I think.
Well, I like food competition shows. I don't know if you know this about me. I like them.
I don't know that I do that exactly.
I was a big fan of the Food Network channel when I had it. That was like the major thing I would watch. And at some point, Food Network became very much about challenges,
Yeah,
competitions.
true.
Not just, it definitely wasn't anymore just like, here's a cooking show. It's always like, it's Top Chef, it's everything. It's Iron Chef America. It's
That Bobby Flay or
Cake Wars. There were a lot of different competitions. So I had fun with that. So I like this type of thing. And it's a little bit of a cooking show because it's kind of like you're seeing them make things, although sometimes they really mess up because they're so stressed out. This one. And then the Australian flavor is humorous as well. I like that whoever captioned it maybe didn't wasn't from Australia because they have a lot of captions to say like mumbles.
Like, I would only heard that perfectly fine. What's the issue? But yes, I write mumbles a lot. So we like blah 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 mumbles, blah blah blah.
Yes.
They're not mumbling. I'm sure it's a hard job. They probably have to caption really quickly. Like, I don't know. Wait, I can't think of anything like super Aussie that's come up right off the top of my head, but I know when it happens. So I'm like, oh, I told you about this.
Sometimes the names of the food are Australian versions, like
True.
veggies and things.
Yeah. And everybody has real good Aussie accents. Yeah. So that's fun. So if anyone wants to check it out, it's available on Tubi.
Let's see. We also watched a musical called The Apple. I had my history with this movie is it was the first movie that I watched on Netflix streaming, and I got that because I think at the time if you were subscribed to the mail in discs, I feel like at the beginning you got like streaming as part of it, or it was like a cheap add-on to it. I don't remember. But anyway, that was the first thing I watched on Netflix streaming was The Apple. And at the time, I absolutely hated it. I was like, this is garbage. This is such garbage. And then more recently, I was reading a book called something like 101 Must Watch Movies for Gay Men by Alonzo Duralde. And it was a very quick read because it's just like a big listicle. But one of the movies that was mentioned in there was The Apple. And I was like, okay, maybe I didn't give this movie enough science. If it's like something listed in the 101 movies,
Well, that's not that many
that's
movies when you
meaningful.
think
It's
about it. Oh,
meaningful.
that's a curated list.
Yes. So I was like, okay. Kept that in my mind, and then we had some downtime, so and it was available on
On
Tubi.
Tuesday.
So decided, okay, let's watch it
Yeah.
then. I remember nothing about it anyway.
I didn't know. I just knew that you said it was kind of awful. We didn't say, like, oh, you're going to think it's horrible, but you were like, it's notoriously bad musical that was in this book. So I was like, all right, sounds great.
Yes.
It was pretty fun, though.
No, it was very
Yeah.
fun for, it's bad definitely, but it's very fun.
Yeah. So the premise is it's like the sort of near future, I
Yeah.
guess, a futuristic world
It's like
where
1994 or
for the
something.
film, which what came out in the 70s, and they're envisioning this future where society is obsessed with music and performers, which I mean we are, right? It's not that much different, but people are like super obsessed with it, and like that's kind of like the focus of culture is culminated in people being really hardcore about music and musicians. And then there's some kind of musical competition, and these two like kids who turn out to be lovers. Well, I thought they were brothers, but lovers from Canada, from middle nowhere Canada, come to perform their songs. So they're supposed to be like kind of, they look like the hippie duo.
Folksy.
Yeah, folky hippie, you know, he's got a guitar and she's got long straight hair, and they sing like a duet, and it's like all, you know, lovey dovey. So they come on and people hate it, but then there's like this other song that's this duo, and it's like all supposed to look futuristic, but it's just very like lo-fi futuristic outfits and things. And it's like, is it called Do the BIM or
Something
something
like
about
that.
the BIM? But it reminds me a lot of Blippo, that game that you
Yeah.
liked from last year. It really gives Blippo vibes. And it's like just this nonsensical song, but people lose their shit over the song. And so there's like a kind of evil, what would you
Like music
say? Yeah,
producer.
music producer is the word for it. And he kind of runs the group that does BIM, but then he sees something in these two Canadians that even though everybody hated them, he's like kind of sees that they have something and he wants to take advantage of it. So he like corrupts the girl, and the guy is kind of left on his own. So they sort of part ways, and then it's what happens from there. And it's a musical, as you said. Some pretty wildly dumb songs. There's a whole like waiting room song when the guy and the girl are originally going to see this producer, and they're in the waiting room and they're seeing the other people waiting around to see this famous music producer, and one of them was like Ballet 2000. It's like, I'll show you my Ballet 2000, and then they just start performing, and it's like complete silliness. And then the apple is called the apple because there's a whole like metaphor about Adam and Eve, and that this music producer is the devil. And so the man who's part of the duo, he keeps kind of seeing these visions of, his girlfriend being Eve and being taken away and seduced by the snake, and then she's the apple and is taken away, and so it's all that. And I was like, oh, this is just a fun little silly thing. But then God literally comes in on a car from this heavens and takes them away at the end. So it's like, maybe it wasn't. It's just like a fun little thing. Is my trying to say something? I don't know. But
Maybe.
yeah, really silly. Really silly indeed.
It's very silly. It's very bad, but it's fun. Some of the songs are fun enough, like you would listen to them again. Some of them definitely not, but some are fun and enjoyable. The costumes are good. I like that a lot. Overall, it's just like, wow, they did this, you know, like they really had a vision and they made all these people do this, and then it's bad, but it's fun. It's enjoyable with that. It's not just like, it's not like so bad you can't watch it. It's definitely watchable.
So it really made me feel like people got together and spent time and money to make this thing, and like they had like big groups of people. It's like maybe on par with like when you see Wicked and there are all these backup dancers. It's like a lot of people us. They did this whole shtick where BIM becomes so like ingrained in society. Everybody has to wear a little holographic triangle called a BIM mark, and if you're not wearing one, you get like fined. And then they instill like BIM exercise hour, and everyone has to stop what they're doing to exercise to the BIM song. And they show cuts of all these different people dancing in all these different scenes, including one where a fireman stopped, fighting a fire. And so there's literally flames behind them. Like, I know that's gonna cost money. I know about these sort of things. Like, that's money, pyrotechnics going into this whole scene. That doesn't actually show that much, and it's just like, one cut in this whole sequence. So I couldn't believe that they got all these people, and that there was some amount of a budget involved, that for something like this.
I would be curious. I'm sure there's like information about the making of this movie and what was going on and why. I would love if like Vinegar Syndrome did a treatment of this where they have like the movie in 4K and then they have like a documentary that they produce about it. That'd be good. They should do that.
Yeah, that would be very fine. And definitely, you can see why it was in your book, because it's extremely campy, whether it tended or not to. I guess we were discussing it was probably trying to be like
Rocky Horror
Rocky
or
Horror. It was
something.
trying to be the, and probably trying to be the next Rocky Horror or something like that. But it just came up as not as good, not as polished, really silly, in not the same way. But there is some like queerness, or like the villain is really queer, right? You know, he's
Villainous himself, but his henchman definitely is.
yeah, he was too,
Well,
but
maybe.
in a way that like, you know, Scar seems very queer in The Lion King or something. But yes, definitely his henchman, who had a really funny name too. I can't remember. It was like
I don't remember.
Scrape or
I don't
something,
remember.
Scab or something like
Maybe.
that. Yeah. Anyway, very silly movie. Recommend. It's on Tubi, so everyone can watch it for free. Yeah, love Tubi. That's for on Tubi. All of our watches are from Tubi this episode. We watched another found footage film. You went and added like basically a bunch of found footage on Tubi. Like, I want to see this and this and this. And I picked Frogman.
I don't remember too much about it. It's like there's like an urban legend that there's a frogman in somewhere in the United
I don't
States.
know, yeah, in the middle of
Anyway,
nowhere, like south.
yeah,
But it's not just an urban legend. The
I
protagonist
was
may
getting
not.
there. I was getting there.
Okay, please continue.
The protagonist of this found footage film saw the frogman as a child, and he and his sister recorded it. And so that like footage is out there is like kind of proof of the urban legend. There's not much proof of it aside from that, and like some other guy had taken a picture years ago. But either way, it's a very popular, like, what would you call it, like a cryptid or whatever,
Yeah,
because
yeah.
the small town is all about Frogman. Like they've got all this stuff because tourists come because of Frogman. So like they have like a whole tourist trap shop where you've got all kinds of Frogman merch and blah blah blah. But either way, the protagonist who saw Frogman when he was a child is mad because people don't believe it's real or whatever, or that he faked it. So he decides to go back to this small town and like actually find Frogman again. What he's meant to do at that point, I don't know. He doesn't really ever explain. He's just like, I want to go back and find him.
He wants to prove that it's real, and he's gonna drag around his
There's two
college
thugs, yeah.
friends who have kind of moved on from college, but he clearly hasn't, so he's like the sad guy who like college was the best years of his life type of guy, right? And they go to the town. He's gonna film, so not only is he gonna film find him, but he wants to film a documentary. So he's become a filmmaker, I think, as sort of as a result of this thing, right? And then it's like kind of comedic at the beginning. Like, I was unclear of whether it was like playing it straight, like this is horror spooky, or whether it's supposed to be really like funny and silly. It kind of reminds me of, and now that I'm thinking of it, I don't remember us talking about this on the podcast, but that The Walrus film that really just to me as disturbing as it was to me, but I thought it was way too gross. It was like a horror comedy, sort of like, what's the human centipede? Well, like, you know, some horrible person, like, you know, mutates a person. Anyway, I'm getting off topic a bit, but that one, it's billed as a comedy. It upset me because I don't like gore, but it was such a stupid premise. Like, you could tell it was meant to be funny, and there were definitely like jokes in it. Whereas this one, I was like very confused about whether it was supposed to be a comedy or not. And the more it went on, I was like, I don't think it is. But the beginning kind of felt like that. Did you feel that way about it? And I mean, the whole problem with Frogman is just a guy who's a frog, and then they talk about the different aspects of him, like he's a wizard and he's got a little wand,
I
and
think it's meant to be a bit silly because he's a frog with a wand.
okay. Well, but then they kind of go whole hog at the end, and he's like, there's like a whole, you know, Frogman death cult going on. And he's impregnated women, and they're maybe killing them and sacrificing them. And so that doesn't seem super funny. Anyway, what did you think overall of Frogman?
It was fine. It's not the best. It's not the worst. It just in the middle. It's fine.
Yeah, I would say the same. I like the scenes like where it was like in the small town and like the people of the town and sort of the like the weirdness of it. Especially like when they go into, you know, the tourist trap shop and they're looking at all the dumb merch. And then the people there, you kind of can't tell, like, are they serious about it or are they just hamming it up for the tourists, you know? Like, and so some people, when they were being interviewed by the director guy, they say things like, oh, yeah, Frogman fucks. And you're like, oh, this guy's full of it. But then later on, you're like, maybe he's not. He's on something that or, you know, the person that the what was it they say in like a bed and breakfast and she was really like talking about how great Frogman lore was for their town. And anyway, just I like those types of things. All the dumb merch they have, like you could buy like Frogman mucus. I'm like, this is something, you know, like probably wherever Mothman is, they probably do the same type of stuff for like Bigfoot, you know. Even in when we go up to Portland, like that's kind of Bigfooty, like,
yeah,
Bigfoot country. And they have all the kind of dumb scenes. Like, you could get Bigfoot droppings. I think this stuff is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So I like those aspects. But some of the more serious stuff, I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not a waste of 2 hours.
Okay.
Okay. And then finally, we both read a book.
It is Perfect Blue, Complete Metamorphosis, which is the book that was written in 1990 or something.
Yeah, early 90s. And it's the book that the Perfect Blue film was based off of. Yes. Satoshi Kon's film, which is one of your favorite films.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. If I had top five movies, it would be one of them. And I do. But anyway.
You want to share them with the
group? No, because I'd have to think about it, but that's enough.
Okay. Okay, well, you always tell me it's one of your favorites. And we saw it together in theaters a couple of years ago, which was really nice.
Yeah.
So it's still pretty fresh in my mind. I don't remember everything.
Yeah.
But I've seen it a couple times now. And yeah, I saw that, I believe it's Seven Seas published this translation. And interestingly, there's also an audiobook version of it. But we read the book. Yeah, and it's more of a novella. It's pretty short. I think I mentioned on the podcast that I was slowly reading it, and that was mostly because I'm a slow reader. Not like slow physically slow, it's like I'll pick up a book and read five pages and I get sleepy and then I don't read it for another week or something. It's just, it tends to be how I read things unless I get really into it, which for whatever reason I didn't with this one. But then I don't know what spurred me on to pick it up again, but we were talking about it or something. I was like, all right, I'm gonna finish it. And then I realized how short it was. I was like, okay. And then I just finished it. And you read it basically in an evening. It was probably like, I don't know, 180 pages, 100, maybe
it's short, 120.
Okay, yeah. So for you, it probably took you like what, 2 hours?
It took me an hour and a half.
Someone wanted to pick it up and read it in an evening.
Probably could be could. Done. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a quick read, relatively different from the film, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Similar themes.
Yeah, similar themes in the sense that your protagonist is this Japanese idol singer, and she's looking at a point in her career where she wants to change. And that's basically the same as the movie. I mean, there's, you know, there's things that are different. In the movie, she's in a group with two other girls and then she starts off on her solo career and that's the big change. Versus here, she was always a solo singer, but she's trying to break up from her cutesy childhood image, childlike image, to a more mature image. So variances but still similar. But there are more, you know, distinctions beyond that. Versus the movie gets very like psychological and you're not sure what's real and what isn't, what is paranoia, what is other things, you know, all of these complexities. Versus, I would say in the book, it's much more straightforward. There really isn't a psychological component in relation to Mina anyway. If anything, it's with the stalker fan antagonist character who is in both things, is in the book and in the movie. But in the movie, he's kind of just one aspect of what's going on, versus in the book, it's mostly him.
Yeah, and I didn't think about this when we were chatting about it before, but in the book you get his perspective as well, right? Because you get in his head. There are chapters where you're seeing what he's thinking and everything, so that's different. So it's more of his psychology involved, whereas the film is really just what's going on with her. And I don't want to like get too much into spoilers, I guess, for people who want to read it, because it is interesting to see like what the differences are. But I think this, the book was maybe much more straight horror to me. You know, it plays out, it's horrific in some aspects. Like, I got pretty squeamish. It's not really that bad. I just am, you know, a baby. And it just like played out very quickly. Like, it doesn't dwell on anything too long. It's got a point and it kind of gets to it and it's like, okay, we're done now. You know? But it was really cool to read and think about how it was written in like 1990. And obviously idol culture in Japan was a thing then, but it's like kind of scary that it doesn't feel old, you know. It feels like something you could have written now, knowing how idol culture still was a thing in Japan. And if anything, maybe they're more infantilizing the idols now than they did then. So one of the core aspects, which I think they do get into in the film a little bit, but
They
you see
do.
it a lot more in this because you're seeing the guy's perspective, the male fan's perspective, is he's just like obsessed with Mina keeping her like innocent childlike image.
Yeah, her
And
purity.
yeah, he wants her to stay pure and he's really hung up on that. And, you know, he doesn't want her to, you know, release a sexy photo book or like have a more mature outfit on because that's not the real her. And so he's hell bent on making sure that she stays the same. And yeah, it's just really interesting. I mean, but it's still very relevant. It's just all kind of to an extreme. Like, I think for me, it almost got a bit silly and how like it was like absurd, like, but I mean the film isn't quote realistic either, but I think it's still more grounded. The only part that was not necessarily unrealistic, but you know, you do deal with whether or not what is happening is reality or not. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know as a viewer what Mina is seeing or what's happening to her is actually really happening or whether she's having some kind of breakdown. Whereas in the book, it's very clear these things are happening, but it gets to a point where it's like, but this can't be happening the way it is. Like, what is going on? Are we just supposed to roll with it? And you mentioned it's kind of like some of the horror films, you know, of like the 70s and 80s, like, you know.
I mean, like any horror movie with a masked killer, they
Yeah.
just keep coming back there, you know.
Yeah. So you shoot them and they come get back up, and it seems like how can they still be kicking? It has that kind of, it's almost like slasher quality or something where it's like the villain just keeps coming and you just kind of gotta roll with it. But I thought it a bit silly towards the end, but it was still fun. Interesting book.
I liked it.
Good. That's, you know, the best review you've given to any book this year, I feel.
No, I think I gave a good review
Yeah,
for
tried.
Challenger.
Yeah, and you like the Dracula one,
Oh,
so
yeah,
you've
the
been
Dracula one as well.
diversifying, and you
It's
like the Slender
Slender
Dracula.
Embrace, yeah.
And you can add a perfect boo to that list. So great. It's always fun reading something with you, so then we can chat about it, just like watching a movie or anything else. So good. Now we both have to move on to other books. Are there any other books that you finished that you want to bring up? I
No.
think, okay, but they're not worth discussing.
No. They're not.
Not even the Housewives one?
No.
Okay, sorry everyone. I teased you and you're not going to hear about it, but he's still reading. Yeah, still taking you along.
Yep. 20 books, I think, now.
Yay, congrats. It's pretty good, as we were saying before, you're well on your way to meeting like the halfway mark. So the goal is 50 for the year. If you got to 25 by like June, you'd be good. So I think you're ahead of the game.
Yeah, I'll keep going.
And with that, it's a short and sweet episode of Pixel Pixel. Thank you all so much for listening, and we shall see you again in 2 weeks.